Hello, everyone, and welcome to NWR Connectivity episode 356. I'm your host, John Reardon, and I am joined, as I so often am, by Neil Ronahan.
Oh, did you guys see that Nintendo Direct? Holy crap.
It was exciting.
It was really good. Hi, everybody.
Joining us to add his opinions about the Nintendo Direct is NWR News Editor Donald Terrio.
I just got a text message from the Nintendo Direct itself. It just said, I lived B asterisk.
Yeah. Holy. So I made the joke to my wife that I had these two conflicting feelings going into this, where on the one hand, obviously, I wanted it to be awesome because Nintendo. But on the other hand, I knew that if it was really good, then that meant like more staying up late and working on like Zelda theory stuff. So I would be like totally happy if it was just awful. Which of course meant that it was one of, if not the best directs they've ever had.
Yeah, like I legitimately struggled to think of one that I liked more than this.
I'm still trying to process everything that happened, and I'm not even a big fan of Metroid Prime Remastered.
Sure, it's one of those ones where like it's so packed with stuff and like high quality stuff that like a lot of it can miss for you, and it could still be the best direct you've ever seen. Like, there's just so much here. Like, for me, Metroid Prime Remake is like, oh my god, amazing. But there's so much else that I haven't, like, I've barely messed with the NSO stuff.
Yeah, like it is one of those ones where I struggle a little bit to say like, oh, there was something for everything, but like, it did reach a lot of niches where you did. I mean, like, I would say, honestly, Metroid Prime, kind of a niche. The retro stuff with Game Boy, Game Boy Advance, a little bit of a niche. Some of they had RPGs. They had Level 5 coming back to life. A lot of old games being remastered or brought back. Less like overwhelming of a certain genre that I feel like the September Direct. I mean, everybody made fun of it. I was kind of, after I enjoyed this so much, I was like, what are people going to get mad about? Is it the roll pun? Is that what people are going to get mad about for this direct? How everybody was mad about the Farm Sims. But no, like, I think it was a decent variety and spread.
And it does, I feel like we mentioned, so ironically, I think we mentioned this back when Advance Wars was announced, in whatever direct that was. I think it was E3, yeah, because yeah, I think it was the same one that Metroid was announced at, Metroid Dread.
Yeah, that's right.
Because I remember talking to, I think, Alex and saying, like, this was, if you like early 2000s Nintendo of Game Boy Advance and GameCube, it was incredible. And I kind of feel that way about this one, where if you like GameCube and Game Boy Advance era Nintendo, this direct really lands for those people, which I am. So that it was incredible.
I also feel like we aged a little bit because I think it's touching like early DS as well, where you have Etrian or even just DS in general, with Etrian and Ghost Trick. You look at Fire Emblem DLC, some of the RPGs, Level 5 coming back. Although I guess I would say Level 5, like DS was Level 5 coming into their own, and then at least 3DS was kind of the downfall.
Well, 3DS was when they made most of their money with Yo-Kai Watch, and then just went downhill from there.
So I'm going to go with a metaphor here for Level 5. Actually, no. It either works if you follow the arc of Anakin Skywalker or the quality of the Star Wars movies, where like the DS era is either like Anakin during the Clone Wars or it's just the quality of Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back. And then the 3DS era is like Revenge of the Sith, where like it's fun, but like, you know, it's the end. Like, this is going to end poorly for everybody. Hopefully the Level 5 sequel trilogy will be a lot better.
Yes.
even if we end up at the apparent batting average of 1-for-3, which Last Jedi, that would imply that we're getting a banging Fantasy Life game sometime this year, and that'd be cool.
Oh man, if Layton's Rise of Skywalker are my quick games.
I think it's generous to consider any of the sequels a successful turn at bat.
I think for Fantasy Life to deconstruct the genre. I mean, actually, I would say the original Fantasy Life did a pretty good job of deconstructing like a style of game. I hope it's kept through in Fantasy Life I or whatever the hell it's called. But the thing that I always loved about Fantasy Life is the fact that you do fight bosses and stuff, but it's always like a miscommunication, or like it's never like a bad guy is defeated. It's always like the, oh, like he had a bad dream. Everything is non-combat in a way, even though there is combat in that game.
Well, let's get into some specific games. There's just a ton to kind of talk through. We're not going to talk about absolutely everything, but we'll go through like the major Nintendo stuff and a few of the third party things that we thought was interesting. So to start, probably the biggest surprise of the show, Metroid Prime Remaster. Neil, it's cathartic to have this game actually exist.
Vindicated.
We've been talking about this on the show for so... Well, okay, so when did our Know Your Developers on Retro Studios come out? Because that's when we started talking about this.
Yeah, yeah, so that would have been 2018.
Yeah.
Because it was right before Retro was announced to be working on Prime 4.
Yeah. Which is probably when they finished this and moved to Prime 4.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is so we have not gotten a crucial piece of information is that it does seem like Retro Studios worked on Metroid Prime Remastered. I'm curious to know if they 100% were the team that finished it or if they got any outside help. Because from what I have put together is I believe that Metroid Prime Remastered was the game that Retro was working on right before Prime 4. I think there was something else before Prime Remastered that got canceled, and I don't think anybody really knows about. But I believe they were working on Prime Remastered before Prime 4, and I think their work on Prime Remastered might be why they got handed Prime 4.
Would it? I mean, this game... From the so I'm up through, I just got the power bombs, so I'm a little way into the Chozo ruins, and everything I've seen so far really screams of a game that went gold, like it finished a while ago and then was able to spend a lot of time just being polished. It has been a very long time since I have seen a Switch game just run and look this good. And I'm trying to think of a Switch game that I think is more visually impressive than this. And really struggling. Maybe Luigi's Mansion 3 would come close. But
so what you're saying is that Western developers are actually the best developers.
Well, let's just say, so here's what I'll say. I think that Western developers seem to have a stronger focus and grasp on technology and how to utilize it. This game makes the Switch sing. I did not know that Switch games could look like this. This looks honestly like a PS4 or Xbox One game. Whereas most Switch games struggle to look like an Xbox 360 game coming out of Japan.
The only exception being apparently there's an error with the doors, which is being reported by the person who apparently worked on the doors for several years. But it's so minor that I don't really think it matters in this context.
What is the error?
They're wrong alpha level on the door shields.
I happen to see that tweet too.
Oh, okay.
But like I said, it's such a minor thing. Like in the news story, I called it the Citizen Kane of games. That was partially in jest, but
sure. But
Metroid
also,
Metroid Prime has an almost impeccable reputation that I cannot impugn.
Yeah, I mean, I believe I'm probably going to wind up being the one reviewing this, and like unless something happens, like my early impressions after like an hour and a half of it are this is a 10. I don't know what something would have to really go wrong to not have this just be a 10.
I swear to God, if you jinx it.
Yeah. I mean, I did have the thought of, like, I don't know. I'm assuming they haven't improved on the artifact hunt at the end. Which should kind of be the only thing I could count against it. But as a remaster, it's an easy 10. The only technical thing that I've encountered is that the little mirrored surfaces on Talon 4 no longer reflect a hilariously 2D sprite of Samus back at you, which may have been done because, like, that particular effect doesn't work in HD. But I was disappointed to not see it recreated in some way.
Yeah, my understanding with this game is that I don't think it changes anything about the gameplay itself. I think it's just they took all the textures and they made that shit look better.
Well, and it's not just I don't think there's any geometry carried over from the original either.
Like, oh, wow.
This isn't Xenoblade DE where they're, you know, putting in new shaders to existing geometry. This I believe is entirely or almost entirely new geometry. It might have been built on the skeleton, but, like, there's details and things in here that this is not. Once again, there is nothing about playing this game that gives away.
Hurry up and talk and finish this episode so I can go play Metro Prime. Damn it!
There is nothing about it that gives away that it was a GameCube game. Like, this, it's, and really, it's especially cool. we just finished the Twilight Princess for the game club, or we will next week. We definitely haven't already recorded that episode. And, like, you compare it against that, which is something where they just went in and replaced textures on the existing geometry. And this really, I feel like, validates some of my comments that'll come up in that episode about how good that game could look if you were to actually properly, like, change the geometry and remaster it on a deeper level than they did. Because, holy crap, this gives me so much, like, reassurance for Prime 4. Like, if this is the art style that they're going for, I'm so excited. This looks so good. And it runs so well.
So I'm legitimately impressed with, like, Nintendo's marketing strategy for this, because, I mean, as we've talked about it on the show before, like, I've heard about this Metroid Prime HD remaster a lot over the past couple of years. And I baffled is the way to describe when it did not show my reaction when it did not show up in the September Direct.
Mm-hmm.
I always kind of expected that when they revealed this, it would be like, here's what we're doing on Metroid Prime 4, but while you wait, here's Metroid Prime HD Remastered. They didn't mention Metroid Prime 4 at all during the announcement of this.
Yeah, and I do feel like they probably could have announced it in September with a February release date, you know, like that would have been reasonable and right along with their usual cycle. So it is interesting that they decided to hold off and shadow drop it.
It is also weird the physical version's coming out on a Wednesday.
It's probably just the fastest they could get it to retailers.
it's like 2 days before Kirby Return to Dreamland Deluxe. Yeah.
Luckily, the crossover for Kirby and Metroid Prime is Neil.
Is me.
Yeah. So, like, limited audience.
We don't have it on the rundown. That Kirby Magalore epilogue thing looks legit awesome.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that there's new content in there.
Yeah. No, that game looks fantastic. That's I feel like we knew about it except for that epilogue thing, but I'm still just struck by how Nintendo, I think, stuck the landing with marketing a Metroid Prime 1 remaster while there is the long-awaited sequel in the series still kind of TBD. It's in development, but we did not get an update. I assume we will get some sort of update later in the year. I did put a poll on Twitter that, 24 people have voted on so far. When is Metroid Prime 4 coming out? Literally no one put holiday 2023.
Yeah.
18% first half of 2024, 32% second half of 2024, 50% people said on the next console.
I would say that if we don't hear about Metroid Prime 4 in the next Nintendo Direct, then it's not coming out this year. I think if we hear about it, like, around E3 time, even though Nintendo's not at E3, like, I think then it could still hit. But
yeah, I mean, I think Metroid Prime 4, I think if it showed up here and was named, definitely on tap for this holiday. I think it still could hit this holiday. I just would say it's way closer to 50-50, much like Zelda for last year.
I can imagine a world in which it actually shadow drops as well in June, but yeah, I think
that would
right.
be really funny. I mean,
there is a gap in Nintendo's release schedule for June right now. Just saying. But more likely, yeah, I think June reveal, because the first reveal was literally a GIF of a 4, and then the game comes out in one of the previous Metroid slots, so probably September or October.
Yeah, because I mean it is the interesting thing of overall with this Direct is we kind of have until August mapped out pretty well. Like you pointed out, there could be a Nintendo game in June we haven't heard about yet, but we kind of, you know, we have a very good lay of the land of what to expect on Nintendo Switch from now until August. We know almost nothing about past August, which is funny.
That's what we should expect, right, at this point? Because, like, I mean, that's, you know, that the way they've been doing their directs is essentially to, like, give you stuff just past where you would expect the next direct to be. Which I would say we should expect something in, like, June, July. So that's perfect. And then we'll get some stuff that kicks us over that, maybe something in late September, and it's a cycle.
Yeah. I did have another poll on Twitter of when is the next game with Mario in the title coming out, because we have had one game with Mario in the title in the past year and a half. And there's a Mario movie launching in 2 months, which it just seems like a missed opportunity. Most people think that there will be a Mario game coming out this holiday, which I'm inclined to agree. That's kind of my expectation. If there's nothing on tap for right around the movie, then you do it when the movie is like on streaming or digital or Blu-ray, sure, or however people buy movies these days.
Well, then Nintendo is known for their ability to hit movie release dates with game releases. So, but I guess you could say that the GBA online for the expansion pack holders would be a Mario release, because how many people have realistically played Mario 3 plus the e-reader levels ever?
Super Mario Advance 4, Super Mario Bros. 3 plus the e-reader levels. Please use the proper title.
I will say, those e-reader levels are so good.
since we're getting there naturally, let's transition into that, the new NSO stuff. So they added Game Boy and Game Boy Color to all NSO subscriptions and Game Boy Advance to NSO Plus Expansion Pack. Which I think is about what we expected them to do. That's been something we've talked about a lot, is have this be multi-tiered. I am glad that they're giving new platforms to the base subscription. I think it's a smart move. I'm amazed that this A wasn't announced last September, and B wasn't announced this September. Like, announcing it in February is extremely bizarre.
They do tend to throw a bone in February directs. Like, I think we got Earthbound in this slot
last year
or the year before. And so I can see the logic behind doing it now, especially if you do 3 month subscriptions instead of the annual.
That's fair. Yeah. I was expecting like some new game announcements for this one.
I
just wasn't expecting systems.
Yeah. I thought it'd be Super Mario RPG or Chrono Trigger. I wasn't expecting two new libraries if you're an expansion pack holder.
Yeah. So the games, the we had 9 on Game Boy, Tetris, Super Mario Land 2, Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening DX, Gargoyle's Quest, Game & Watch Gallery 3, Metroid 2, Return of Samus, Wario Land 3, Kirby's Dream Land, and for some reason, an Alone in the Dark Game Boy Color game.
Dude, I'm I need to post. So whenever I can, if I'm watching a direct, I go ahead and just set my webcam to record, just in case a Star Fox game drops. and that Alone in the Dark one came up, and I need to post it, because you just audibly see me watching through these, and Alone in the Dark comes up and I can just go, fuck yeah. Like, that's the kind of shit that I want. Like, and that's something I noticed today. Like, that's the kind of stuff that's been missing from the N64 library they have so far. Like, N64 is like all of the greatest hits.
Hey, we got Mid back.
Yeah, but that's
Alone in the Dark is the new Winback.
Like, yeah. And Winback is pretty. I mean, I'm looking. Where are the Jelly Boys? Like that tier it's of fair. Stuff on N64. And so I'm glad that one of our launch games on Game Boy is Alone in the Dark, which is honestly a kind of cool Game Boy game.
And then I'm pulling up the video on my phone just because I don't have. It's probably written down somewhere.
Do you want the I have the list
of the ones upcoming.
Oh, okay,
It's the Zelda Oracles, the Pokemon trading card game, and that's actually going to be the best way to play the Pokemon trading card game over the internet in a few months, and also Kirby's Tilt and Tumble.
Yeah, which, and then for Game Boy Advance, where we'll get to the list of what is out now, but Fusion, Kirby and the Amazing Mirror, which actually that is a multiplayer game, is that's a good get for NSO. The first GBA Fire Emblem, or the first, not the first GBA Fire Emblem, the first GBA Fire Emblem is coming to Japan, because it never came to America. The first one in America, F-Zero Maximum Velocity, Golden Sun. That's also another...
It's nice to see a Golden Sun appearance.
Yeah.
It lives.
So, the ones that came out on Game Boy Advance, the before-mentioned Super Mario Advance 4, Super Mario Brothers 3, WarioWare Inc., Kuru Kuru Kuru, man. That's one that that's I believe a Japan only get maybe Japan and Europe. I think it came out in Europe.
It came out eventually, but on the Wii U only.
Yeah, which that is going away very shortly. The Mario Kart Super Circuit, which sucks. Mario and Luigi Superstar Saga, and then Zelda Minish Cap, which good lineup.
I just realized something. There's a very noticeable hole, especially in the Game Boy lineup. There is another video from a Nintendo-related company this month. And remember when they announced that the Stadium games were coming to N64? And they explicitly said those games could not transfer anything in? I wonder if that's the Pokemon Day announcement.
Oh, that sure.
You could convert a Pokemon release on NSO, have that data uploaded into Stadium.
That would be
now.
Really
can
cool.
I connect my NSO Pokemon release to my Pokemon bank?
Actually, yes.
Good.
Yeah. Or more likely, Pokemon Home, but same thing.
Yeah.
Whatever it's called. Yeah, because
you could do that on 3DS.
That,
right?
They did have that, but on that, like the Pokemon games were sort of their own unique app, as opposed to being housed inside of the NSO thing. So I assume they had a bit more freedom there. But I suppose as long as the N64 one can read the save file, depending on how those save files are stored, as long as it can read that, then you would think it should be able to pull stuff. But I don't know how it works. I'm not a smart man.
And I mean, especially if the Pokemon company did go through the hassle of getting those Game Boy games on 3DS Virtual Console, to then feed those Pokemon into the current ecosystem, you'd probably want to have that continue to happen. And we are weeks away from that not being able to happen anymore. So I don't know if it'll necessarily happen with this Pokemon Day, but I would assume it will happen eventually.
Yeah.
But because I think Stadium's like the only unannounced N64 games, right?
Yep, those are because we have GoldenEye. Did we get through all the Mario parties that they announced?
I thought they announced. I don't think we've gotten three yet. That one.
Yeah,
we
have one and two.
Okay.
Three. I think got announced, and we haven't gotten that one yet.
Let me pull the list because I think Excitebike 64 might be on there as well.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot about that.
That's a great game.
Yeah. When's my Excitebots remastered at the level of Metroid Prime remastered?
Unfortunately, the company Monster Games got acquired by the people who make iRacing, so probably not happening.
I mean, like, good for Monster Games. Maybe Nintendo should have acquired them when they had the chance to. SOPs. Excite Spaceship. That's what I want.
I play that.
So from the announcement that they had in September, the N64 games that are missing are the Stadiums, Excitebike 64, and I believe 1080 Snowboarding. I don't.
Yeah, 1080 hasn't come out either.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So there's more of those than I remembered.
I'm really happy to have the Game Boy and Game Boy Advance games. I messed around with both of the apps that are out. I played some Super Mario Land 2, love that game. Played some WarioWare, also love that game. I played some Game Boy Tetris and was like, I have so many memories, so many core memories playing that Tetris game as a kid. Mm-hmm. But I have Tetris Effect on my Switch. What am I doing? Like, I have the best Tetris as opposed to the first Tetris.
Yes, but this has online multiplayer, which Tetris Effect might also have.
And I also Metroid 2 being there, like, that's... It is a game that I believe you could have heard me during our Metroid Game Club before Dread came out, ragging on a lot the Game Boy version. But it was talking to Berube when he came on that episode back then. And then I actually played some of the game on Analog Pocket. I have a renewed appreciation for Metroid 2 on Game Boy, even if it still kind of sucks.
I will say, with rewind and save states,
yes,
that'd be the way I'd want to play it. So,
yep. I booted that one up and rattled off a couple Metroid, and then backed out because I knew if I had a save state, I would not remember where I was, because I'm not going to go back to it anytime soon.
You know what's not on here is Lunar Chase.
Yes.
Which
Bang the drum for Lunar Chase. Either way,
this announcement came up and I got so excited because it meant I got to post the video that I made in September of 2021.
Yeah.
So that was thrilling. And the first comment on that video, which is getting like no views, by the way, the first comment on that video is somebody just going, how long has this been in your pocket? 2 years, sir. Literally sitting on. Well, technically, this isn't the version that was sitting on the channel. I updated it before the direct, just in case, with the current Patreon supporters to make sure it was all good and up to date. But yeah.
I think that Zelda trailer for Tears of the Kingdom, which did not get delayed, but is $70 instead of $60. Yeah, that Zelda trailer is incredible.
That was the best trailer they've had so far. I would almost go to, it's the first good trailer they've had since the initial tease, if you ask me. I'm like, it's the first good, like, it's the first trailer that feels like an actual trailer and not a teaser.
Yeah. Like, this is, I feel like we had a couple years of teaser trailers and now we actually got the trailer before the movie comes out.
We have spoken dialogue from what appears to be a villain. Might have been hearing Ganondorf talking in this trailer, yeah, which would be the first time that's ever happened. Zelda vaguely asks someone to help Link.
I think there was a Zelda 1 boss on the bridge at some point.
Yeah, there was a dragon.
Did I miss? I need to watch. I've only seen that trailer once. I need to rewatch it.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the name of that? I forget the name of that dragon boss.
Gleok.
Yeah, Gleok.
Oh, from like the first, like the multi-headed one?
Yeah.
How did I miss a multi-headed dragon?
So it's on a bridge, and I only noticed it the second time that I watched it, because then I was like, what's the secret stuff? It was funny watching this trailer with my wife, because she's just like, it just looks like the first one. And I'm like, but it's vertical.
It's funny because this is the first time that I've seen it and gone, cool, this doesn't just look like the first one.
To be fair, like, this is also the same person when I asked her what Pokemon Legends Arceus looked like. She said it looks like Breath of the Wild if it was made for GameCube. So maybe she's just coming for the top rope.
That's the most accurate description of that game I've ever heard.
I asked her that because I was legitimately like, maybe she'll be into this. And then she said that. I'm like, she's not going to be into this.
Yeah, that's savage. It's once again, I need to do this every time something comes out on Switch and doesn't look like dog shit. Pokemon Legends Arceus and Metroid Prime Remastered are on the same system. One of them probably had 20 billion times the budget of the other. It's amazing.
I do see people being like, I just want to know more specifics about this game, and I kind of don't care. I'm there.
This one got me far enough. Yep. Like, yeah. I've been having trouble getting hyped. This one got me to the point where I'm like, okay, there we go. I'm excited. I know enough. I have mysterious dialogue that I want to know what the context of is. Like, this is there. Like, there is a Breath of the Wild trailer that very much occupies this exact same space. And I remember when that one came out, that was the one that was like, okay, I'm in, let's go. Like, and this one did the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, this it seemed like this was their attempt at doing the 2017 Switch event.
Yep.
Zelda trailer, yep, which
exactly.
I don't think you can replicate that feeling entirely, but they did it. They sure. did an admirable job.
Can I confess I'm still on the fence because there was something I was looking for in that footage that I didn't see, but I don't know if that's confirmation or not.
What are you looking for?
A stamina meter. Ooh. For movement.
I can here's what I'll say. I would be willing to bet a substantial amount of money with you that there is indeed a stamina meter.
We have a soft confirmation of weapon breaking again, so
yep. Which
I wouldn't be surprised, but I don't know. I just me and Zelda game stamina meters just don't get along.
Yeah, and that's where I like if it was only Breath of the Wild that had it, then like maybe I would say they could change it to some sort of quality of life change. But the fact that like that's a thing from Skyward Sword, like that's that was already introduced to the series before Breath of the Wild, and I think it's a part of the series now for sprinting and stuff like that.
And there are parts about looking at this trailer that I feel like I feel like there's a lot of Breath of the Wild footage where you can look back and you're like, oh, that's what they were hinting at. And I get the sense that like we're gonna have a lot of clarity on what things in this trailer were pointing to
once the
game is played by people that can talk about it.
I mean, that's when Breath of the Wild was teased with Link jumping off his horse, going into slow motion and shooting an ancient arrow into the Guardian.
That's a gameplay element.
Now, 5 years later, you go, oh, that was like the game. Like that, yep. all that's yeah. that was
they actually did a very good job of summarizing the game in teaser form.
Yeah.
And this is where I mean, like, we didn't see any of the Link like going through ground that we have seen in other teasers.
No.
But we do see
a lot of vehicles, though.
Yeah, Link making vehicles, which if this is a secret Banjo-Kazooie nuts and bolts follow up, I am all the way in.
Yeah, that's not a bad thing. What it looked like to me was that I don't know how much of like the Breath of the Wild breaking the game stuff that you guys follow. But one of the popular things to do in that was to like take a minecart, put it inside of another minecart. Magnesis the bottom minecart and make yourself an airship. And the way a lot of this stuff looked in this was like, oh, they took what people were doing for fun, like how people were breaking their engine to do this weird stuff, and they said, that's awesome, let's make it a mechanic.
I will sit here with my banner that says in the Zelda team we trust. I think with Breath of the Wild they showed how much they paid attention like how thoughtful their attempt at making it, you know, that kind of open world game was, to the point where like I get it if you have your quibbles as to how the Breath of the Wild as an open world game functions, but I don't think there's another video game that captures what that game was going for, and a lot have tried and succeeded. Like Elden Ring I think succeeds at like taking some of those vibes and mixing it with a Dark Souls game to very good effect, but like it's just by the fact that Elden Ring basically punches you in the dick repeatedly is a little bit different than Zelda, unless you're playing Zelda on Master Quest.
It's Elden Ring and Halo Infinite are somehow the two games that got closest to kind of understanding what Breath of the Wild was going for, and even then it's not like those are the two where I feel like they understood like the underlying concept as opposed to like Immortals Fenyx Rising, which is do it.
I was about to say I'm still mad that Immortals Fenyx Rising exists.
Yeah.
Because it was just that like, oh, like it's everything that I liked about Breath of the Wild, but they did it the opposite way.
Yep.
Sonic Frontiers also made an attempt.
Sonic Frontiers is
hilarious.
It's a very flawed game that I hope they continue to experiment with and don't just go back to Sonic Colors.
I think it's a cool idea that is like, it is like how Nintendo, I feel like, largely made the right decisions in open world games with Zelda. Sonic Frontiers, it feels like they take a middle path where they're like, but what if we did this? And then everybody's like, it's not terrible. It's not good either.
The redeeming core value of Sonic Frontiers is that it's the only Sonic game they've ever made in any amount of dimensions where it is fun to control Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah, it is also. Yeah, it is very fun to run around those open worlds, and then they're like, "Go into cyberspace," and you're like, "Well, I'd rather not.
I don't wanna." Yeah, yeah.
What if you suppose I didn't?
Yeah, that's like the bad Sonic. I say that, but I also know people who are like, "This game is really bad until you get into the cyberspace levels." So,
well,
I'm starting to think I might just not like Sonic. I don't know.
Yeah.
Don't worry, John. You're not alone.
Yeah.
No, I'm not.
This is a safe space.
Yeah. By the way, I did go to the I see Gliok now. I'm not sure how I missed the dragon with its head on fire standing on a bridge.
But it is like in the grand scheme of things, a little understated, because it's not like it's like right in the middle of the screen.
Yeah,
but it's there. I can't wait because they're doing the thing where they bring old 2D shit to 3D, like the Lynel. Yeah. I remember when I first saw Lynel and I pooped myself, and after I cleaned myself up, I was like, is that that thing from Zelda 1?
Yeah.
And I confirmed that it was.
I think we brushed by it, the fact that Tears of the Kingdom is the first $70 Nintendo game that doesn't come with a giant leg strap. But
well, we don't know it doesn't just yet. It still could.
It actually comes with a dildo. It pairs with a leg strap very well.
Yeah, but this is probably why North America got the voucher program again, because now you can go get Tears of the Kingdom and you're Pikmin basically 4. You're basically getting Pikmin 4 for what, $20 at that point?
For half price. Yeah, because it's $100 for the voucher, and if you get a $70 and a $60 game, you are saving $30.
Well, and assuming there will be other $70 games, that voucher gets a lot more valuable.
Yeah, the big thing is that Tears of the Kingdom's eShop file size is currently listed at 18.6 gigs. So I think if they're going to do when they're doing the physical carts, it's probably that 32 gig cart that barely ever gets used.
Is the one below that 16?
Yes, it is.
I believe so.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's exponential going down. I think the minimum is 1, and then it goes 2, 4, 8, 16, 32.
Yeah, the 32, I've heard that like it is prohibitively expensive to use the 32 gig cards.
And even outside of like the cart stuff, I mean, if we're being real, like the $60 price point for games was established in like 2006, 2007.
Yeah.
And looking at inflation since then, $60 in 2007 is like almost $90 today. So, and even I saw someone else on Twitter point out that when Breath of the Wild came out in 2017, if you go from 2017 to now, then $60 is worth $72. So it's almost like Breath of the Wild is the same price as Tears of the Kingdom when you account for inflation.
Yeah.
It's just a reality. I mean, like, it's not, obviously I don't want to pay $10 more, but it's, I can't look at Nintendo and be like, this is ridiculous, because
I think if Nintendo was like, Pikmin 4 is also $70, and I don't know, Metroid Prime 4 is also $70, then I'd be like, okay guys, come on, slow down. But if it is something where it's either tied to the 32 gig card, or it is a, you know, like lengthy epic of a game like Tears of the Kingdom is looks like it is, like I won't like wobble too much about it, because it does, like, it's, games are expensive, man. And even if Tears of the Kingdom sells a buttload, like, we should not exist in a world like how Avatar The Way of Water needed to, what, make $2 billion to break even? Like,
and
that
unfortunately,
is
I think it did.
Oh, it did. It did. It
Which
did
is
break
really
even.
Too bad, because I was hoping we could put an end to that.
I do really like some of the quotes from James Cameron, where he said, like, you want to know how expensive this movie was? Really fucking. And like it was around when it came out. I did read an interview with him where he made that about how expensive is it really fucking. He also did make a comment that like the number that we have to hit to break even is like the second biggest movie of all time. And I mean, dude did it, so you know, call your shot. But if that's the way that we're operating with making things, maybe there's a better way. And if part of that better way is charging $10 more for a Zelda game, okay.
Right. When you operate that way and need to make that much money charging not as much money, like, you're essentially putting yourself in a position where one bomb just wipes you out.
Yep.
And that's, we've seen that happen, especially as we entered like the HD era. We saw that happen to so many companies. Where,
I mean, you look at THQ, Udra.
Exactly.
Udra killed it.
Yeah.
We don't have a Rogue Squadron collection on Wii because Lair utterly tanked and killed
Man 5. Yeah. Perfect example. Yep. Yeah. And so, yeah, giving yourself that extra cushion. And I'll also highlight that, you know, I've seen a lot of people comment that this wouldn't be a big deal if, you know, wages were also going up with inflation. And I agree with you. But I will say that Nintendo did just give like every one of their company a 10% raise. So like they're doing it. It's obviously not everybody is, but it seems like they're doing that the right way. And this is sort of a reality we have to face.
And we'll probably talk more about this later, but there are some numbers that suggest that Nintendo might need to be in a position to start charging more for big Switch games like this, just because the hardware is into its, what, seventh year?
You're on year seven, which is insane.
Yep.
Yeah.
And no price drop.
No price drop, and still in a very strong position.
Yeah.
Like the PS5 is beating them some months, but like they're still doing great.
The Switch is now the third best-selling console ever.
Yeah.
You know a game I'm stoked for largely because of the space dog named Ochi?
I had a nice segue, but let's do yours.
I just, you know, the space dog in Pikmin 4, incredible. It's so good.
Yeah, I think the nice thing about this trailer, it does definitively answer our question from the teaser, which was, is that gameplay or are those target renders? They seem to be gameplay. This is a very pretty looking game.
It's a good looking video game.
We finally got to see the lower camera angle that they talked about when they announced this, and I'm all on board. I think it's funny how much that kind of seems like it just changes the kind of game it is.
Yeah.
And I really think it flatters their art design to have the camera down low like that with the nice like depth of field effect in the background, and it looks really nice. I'm super excited for this, and I'm glad they're trying something new after doing pretty similar games for the first three in terms of like the core gameplay.
I'm interested to see what the structure is, because as we were talking about with Zelda, like Nintendo usually does a very good job in these trailers of giving you like a subtle overview of what the game is. It looks like it has those underground segments that like Pikmin 2 did, because they have that moment where like everybody gets blown out of the dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
But it also looks like you're going to rescue other like other space people, I guess. But
astronauts. We don't know if these are from Hakatate or Hakatate. Whatever the other planet was. There's two. So we'll have to wait for that sweet lore.
how long do you give it till Olimar shows up, though?
Yeah, I mean, he has to. It's,
I mean, post, well, not, no, that'll, he'll show up at the very end, but then when they port this to the next system, then he'll have like his own little levels that aren't very good.
Brittany. Yo, Pikmin 3, like top 10 Nintendo game of the past decade.
Fantastic game.
I guess, you know what I did realize when this got its delayed date of July 21st? It is almost 10 years to the day of Pikmin 3 releasing.
Wow. Everywhere but North America.
Yeah, because North America came out in August, I think.
Yeah, back in the day, I remember you saying on this podcast back in the day that it was Nintendo didn't like releasing games in July, and now they've done it, what, 6 years in a row?
Yeah, there was, I remember, I think there's an interview with, like, at E3, we would occasionally just, like, get an interview with a marketing person, and I asked that question about July, and it was very PR response, but I think it was something along the lines that, like, we have market research that says games don't sell that well during that time period. Times change. Like that's the best way to. And I think honestly, the way that some of those games have performed in July, I think they are right that times have changed.
Yeah.
But Pikmin 4, it looks incredible. replaying Pikmin 3 Deluxe when it came out on Switch, you can check out my review. I did look at my review recently, and I say like it comes precariously close to becoming the definitive version of Pikmin 3, because I think the controls in the Wii U version are still like the tops.
There's a lot of ways in which the Wii Remote is just a more capable controller for being a pointer than anything else ever will be.
But Pikmin 3 is just such a good game, and it's much like how I have faith in the Zelda team, I have faith in the team making Pikmin, because even if it takes them a very, very long time to make video games, seemingly, they are usually very good whenever they come out.
Yep. Yeah, and a really great example of what we were talking about the other week, where as Nintendo gets into this late gen era, you start to get kind of the neat lesser games where they can experiment a little bit. And I feel like Pikmin 4 is going to be a great example of that.
Yeah. And I'm hoping there's co-op. I watched the trailer with my kid and he was like, can we play this? And I'm like, I hope so.
We shall see. It did look like you were able to directly control the dog at one point, because the camera was kind of locked on him as opposed to your character.
Oh, hell yeah. Let my kid control Space Dog. Let's go.
Yeah.
Give me Space Dog amiibo stuffed like Poochie. Let's go.
But speaking of giving you stuff, bunch of DLC in this. We had Xenoblade Chronicles 3. We got the announcement of the Wave 3 character. And then we also got a tease of Wave 4,
Before we get there, they also have like the roguelike challenge mode. That's awesome.
Yeah, where you take one character into a challenge battle, and if you win, then you get to add more characters to your party.
It's a really cool idea. Like, I'm legitimately looking forward to the third wave, which I really thought the third wave coming out would just be like that. Oh, I'll get the new character and then finish up the game. But now now that challenge mode seems great.
I did notice that some of the new costumes for that were Xenoblade. Like the costume for Lands was a Xenoblade 1 costume for Rhyme. Yeah. Good stuff.
Is Xenoblade 3 the best video game?
I mean, it's not Star Fox, but it's one of the best RPGs.
Best RPG since Chrono Cross. That's my metric, and that game continues to deliver.
Yeah.
But let's talk about, so the story tease, which I guess, like, if I don't even think, I still haven't even seen the end of Xenoblade 3. But John, feel free if there's anything spoilery you want to mention.
I don't think we need to go too into spoilers for it. But we got to see what looked like an older Shulk and Rex and Noah fighting who appeared to be Alvis from Xenoblade 1, who is, if you played Xenoblade 2, is Antos, the third Aegis. That's interesting. What we don't know right now is, and I'll be vague here, this could either come after the end of Xenoblade 3, where these characters have grown, but it could also, through vague, non-specific ways, come before Xenoblade 3, before these characters had younged.
This series does have connections to wibbly wobbly timey wimey stuff. So.
Yes. Yeah. And the one thing that has me thinking that it might be after, not before, is the presence of Alvis, who, based on what we know about these characters prior to the events of Xenoblade 1, wouldn't have been who they were in conflict with. So that's the one thing that makes me think, okay, this might actually be after the end of Xenoblade 3.
And I would assume that, we'll see. I mean, it is tough, because you look at what they did with Torna, that you'd think that maybe this is going to be geared to being a standalone release. But I also do like the idea of, like, I don't know, kind of concluding the trilogy and something that takes place with, like, after all three games is something that I don't know if you could really do standalone, but I think it would be the way cooler experience.
Well, I do think that because of the way that Xenoblade 3 ends, you could set a game after it without you having to play Xenoblade 3 first. Torna is technically standalone, but you sure will get a lot more out of it if you've played Xenoblade 2. I think you could land this on that spot. The other thing that keeps me from thinking that it's before Xenoblade 3 is that that would kind of require them to do a Rogue One. And based on their approach to Age of Calamity, I don't know if they're willing to do that. And I talked to Matt about this a little bit, because even Torna, which is like a little bit of a Rogue One story, still ultimately ends with like you defeat Malos and everything seems to be okay. Like at the end of Torna, they think they've won.
Yeah.
It's not a bad ending. Whereas this one, if it's going to come before 3, would have to be a bad ending. And I don't know if that's something they want to do or not. Especially ending your Xenoblade 3 storyline on a bummer.
And it seems like that.
Especially when it already has a bad ending in the first place.
It also does seem like that, like this is the end of a trilogy. This seems like it. This DLC is going to potentially put a capper on 3 entries in the Xenoblade series.
And then we can finally do X2.
Yes.
If one of the X characters shows up in that crossover fight, I will be so happy.
I would be,
you have no idea.
I would just be excited, even if it was just like during the ending credits, if there was just a note that said, "Hey, we remember that Xenoblade X exists." I would be like, "Sweet, that's great. Good job."
Thanks, man.
I really appreciate you saying that.
When's it coming to Switch? Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah. We have to get through Bat and Kaidos first.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every other Monolith Soft game before we can bring Xenoblade X to Switch.
Fire Emblem Engage, they showed off the rest of the characters, released Wave 2 today. And Wave 4 is going to be some kind of story follow-up thing. Looks like that's cool.
Yeah, I've gotten one of the characters now before we started. They look to be pretty cool. I still have to get the others. They do have a unique conversation if you have Lynn. I went for Hector first, so you will get a special conversation between the two emblems if you have the matching one. So you
would need Ike and
Corrin for sorting.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
And then later on we get Lucina meeting up with her parents, and I don't know what the hell they're going to do with the Fire Emblem Heroes character, because there's nobody else from Heroes in the game.
I do think that's kind of cool, though. Because I know a lot of people
I didn't realize that Fire Emblem Heroes had original characters, I'll be honest.
There's like 2.
There's like 2 dozen at this point.
Yeah, I guess I haven't played it since the first couple months. I do also like how they kind of have, like, her special power is that she, like, summon characters, much like you summon characters in Fire Emblem Heroes. Like, it's very clever.
I look forward to her firing a 3-star healer for absolutely 0 damage. Although, and I think they've actually used Heroes as the basis for who these emblems are going to be, because every single one of them has won the annual fan poll for who gets the special version, who's regularly available. Although they've really cut it close, because Soren and Robin only won this year.
We also got Mario Kart 8 DLC announced. Though weirdly, I'm surprised not Shadow Dropped.
Yep.
But we're getting a new course, which is based on Yoshi's Island. We're getting Birdo and more new characters that have yet to be disclosed.
Is that going to be like the item switch they added with the last update, where they're going to be available to everybody, or are they truly going to be pass exclusive?
Oh, that's a good question. I would imagine they'd be pass exclusive, but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess I'm looking at the press release right now, and it's not worded in a way that confirms or denies that. It just says Birdo, who originally hit the track of Mario Kart Double Dash, is also being added. Returning characters from the Mario Kart series will be added in future waves. Yeah, like, it's not worded in a way that says this is a part of Wave 4, but it also does say that other characters will be released in future waves. Like, it could be like the item switch. We'll find out when this comes out in spring.
Yeah, and when they did Wave 3, for instance, they did not drop it that day. It was announced in September. But we didn't get the reveal for it till like the end of November, and it came out first week of December. So I wasn't surprised I was expecting 2 tracks to come out in the tease, but 1 track and a character is probably equivalent.
Yeah. some DLC that we don't need to spend a lot of time talking about because it's a bad game that nobody likes. Splatoon 3 is getting a new hub area. The DLC everyone wanted.
And I guess the second part of the DLC, Side Order, is the single player thing. What the fuck?
You know what's funny about that single player thing is while they teased it with like a weird like black and white cityscape and like fish floating by, I'll bet you money that that campaign consists of a bunch of bespoke platforms in meaningless floating boxes.
That's a tradition that started with the Otto expansion. I don't think it's going to change at this point.
Oh, I mean, it started with Splatoon 1.
Yeah, and like it's a shame. Like, I just look at Splatoon 3 and how little I care about that game.
I'd like to care so much.
And I know, I mean, like, if we touch on sales numbers at all, Splatoon 3 selling really well.
Yeah, they can put whatever, I'm the weirdo here. Well, and as somebody who was like, nobody will buy this, and then like 20 million people did, I can also look at Inkopolis and be like, nobody's going to buy an expansion pass for the hub from Splatoon 1, but no other content from Splatoon 1. And they're all going to buy it. More people are going to buy the expansion pack than own the game.
Bought Xenoblade and Fire Emblem Engage combined.
Yep. Especially, people don't buy good games.
Especially if they throw it into the expansion pack the way that they've done with other recent passes like this.
Including free, I guess,
would be about the right price.
And I can't judge that much, I guess, considering that I did buy the Xenoblade 3 and the Fire Emblem Gage season passes when like the games came out.
But you know, the difference is that those added content to the game.
You're right.
Like imagine if Fire Emblem was like, all right, the Fire Emblem expansion pass is that you get to walk around the monastery. Yeah, there's no new content. You just walk around it.
Dorothea is singing.
There'd be none of the characters. They would just be the same. Like, we have new shopkeepers. Dorothea only sings once
every 3 months.
Yep. Yeah, that's the level of this DLC. And it's going to sell better than the Xenoblade Fire Emblem DLC combined.
Well, I mean, Xenoblade, Fire Emblem, and their DLCs all combined into one number.
Yes,
and
the entire Xenoblade franchise combined. Yeah, which I believe amounts to roughly like 8 million sales.
And Advance Wars, it exists almost a year to the day. It's still time for another war to happen to delay it.
Yeah.
Not looking forward to April, guys.
Yeah, I thought it was banished to the Shadow Realm for eternity to keep us safe.
Still not coming out in Japan. Feel like whenever I talk to people about it, they always forget because they're like, is that going to be a marquee game? And I'm like, no, it is not.
I do wonder if perhaps Advance Wars has the power to like reverse its own atrocities. Like if we release this while the war in Ukraine is still going,
maybe it'll
Advance Wars have the potential to bring peace where previously it had only brought ruin?
They need to make Advance peace.
Please, Nintendo. The world needs you.
There was some talk in the Discord today about Buddy Mission Bond, which was, I think, the one Switch game Nintendo published that has not come out outside of Japan. So if we're trading that for Advance Wars, that's a deal I'm willing to make.
I mean, I'm like honestly looking forward to the game.
I'll probably buy it.
Yeah. I'm not that big of an Advance Wars fan that I'm like chomping at the bit for it. But like those games are fun. I was messing around with, I have a GBA copy of 2. Played some of that a couple months ago. I was like, yeah, I'd play a remade version of this game.
Yeah. We also saw Octopath Traveler 2, which is of course coming out soon. Neil, you've actually been playing Octopath Traveler 2 and not some like pleb demo.
Yeah, but which like there is a demo out. I actually did download the demo because I want to boot it up.
Why?
Because I'm academically curious to see how I'm not going to play it, but I want to open it up because usually it says like, oh, like here's the limitations and stuff like that. I guess I could probably find it online. I went download crazy. I got the Sea of Stars demo. I got Metro Prime. I got the Game Boy stuff. But I've been playing. I got a review copy for Octopath Traveler 2 on Switch. I I'm a lot farther than what the preview embargo can talk about. So that's all I'll say about that. But for the content of the preview embargo, I could play the chapter ones of all eight characters, which one of the things that I really like is that one of them, you actually play the chapter one and chapter two, because Oswald the Scholar, who is jailed for a crime he didn't commit, his first two chapters are him breaking out of prison. It's pretty cool. And in general, and I am going off of, it's been a long, well, actually, I did play through a little bit of Octopath Traveler when it hit Game Pass. But I outside of booting up the Switch version of Octopath Traveler to confirm that, yes, Octopath Traveler 2 looks visually way better. It is an HD 2D game that is more on par with Live Alive and Triangle Strategy than Octopath Traveler, which is very clearly the first HD 2D game, and Square has gotten better at making those games from a visual perspective. From my memory, these chapter ones are a lot stronger. There's a lot more variety across them. I feel like some of the stories that they're telling are more like there's, I feel like it's better leveraging some of the characters' specific abilities, which that also goes into another thing of how in the first game there were path actions. So like one, like, you know, the thief character could steal shit from people. And like the dancer would like allure people or something like that. I think some of the other ones you could provoke people, just kick the shit out of them. Other ones you could be like, I'm very smart, let me learn things about you. In this, every character has a day path action and a night path action. So for example, Oswald the Scholar, his day path action is that he can scrutinize people, you know, get some information about them, maybe find a hidden item, get a discount at a local inn. And during the night, he kicked the shit out of people, and then steal their lunch money. The thief character, I'm trying to think, Throne, the thief. I know she has a steal, I think is her nighttime action. I think her daytime action, I forget exactly what it is. It might be another fight one, but they still fit into the couple of like stereotypes that are like the couple of types that the path actions fall in, where there's usually multiple ways to get items from people, whether it's beating them up, stealing them, or beating them up and taking them from them, stealing from them, or even if you're the merchant character, just buying their items from them. But the fact that every character has two actions means that you don't need to cycle in and out to do specific things. You can usually just go from day to night or night to day if you're like, oh, I want to go steal some stuff. And also the path actions, because there's two of them per character, they're usually very well leveraged in their various chapters, as far as, you know, like it's not necessarily go into the chapter, do combat. It's usually here's an application of their path action as you also do combat and have story bits and stuff like that. Donald, I forget, did you play the first one?
I did, but one thing I'm wondering about is, do the characters actually tend to interact more? Because it really seemed like they were not interacting with each other at all in the first game.
I will, I don't know, my laugh gave it away.
That laugh could have been about anything.
As per the preview embargo, I cannot totally comment on that. There is a thing in the game that I cannot talk about yet called shared paths, which, I mean, they've talked about it in marketing, so I don't really feel that bad about talking about it, and I can talk about it generally. In that, the characters are paired off in groups of two, where they like basically have a quest where it'll be, I think one of them is Throne the thief, and Temenos, the priest guy, the cleric. They have a quest where they team up, and I think there's a couple chapters for each of those, and each character has a pair. Judging by the chapter ones, you're technically doing them all by the character, by their lonesome. But it does seem like that same thing of the characters are kind of going on the story by themselves. That seems to be the way it goes. There is travel banter, which is essentially like, I forget the name, was it the party chat from Tales games, where like you'll just like hit a button and get like a cute little aside.
Yeah, I think Dragon Quest does that too.
Yeah. And like that's fine. Like, I don't think it does that full interaction that you're probably looking for, but they make steps to at least like make that less glaring. I mean, I have played beyond the preview embargo, but I'm nowhere near the end of the game. I am very curious to see if everything builds to some kind of more rewarding end, because that is one thing in Octopath Traveler 1 is that they're, everybody has their stories, they end, and then there's like a secret final thing. I wonder how that's going to go in this game. And honestly, depending on how that turns out, that might affect my review a lot. So, unfortunately, as much as I just want to play Game Boy games and Metroid Prime Remastered, we played a lot more Octopath, which it's good. I have been enjoying it quite a bit. There's a lot of TBD things about some of the common questions about, like, did this fix issues that people had with the first one? As of right now, I can say that if you liked the first Octopath game, this is a refined version of that video game with some nice little additions. The last thing that I want to call out is that I'm really into the layout of the world, because it's basically like a U-shaped, and then there's a big sea in the middle. I believe eventually you get a boat, which I'm looking forward to. Right now I have to I can fast travel now, but to get to the places originally, I have to pay to ride a boat to different ports. It's the idea of being able to also explore the world on a boat sounds like a really cool way to, deepen the exploration of the game. A lot of promise in Octopath. I'll have more to talk about it, I guess, next week. I think that one of the next episodes that we record after this, because we already recorded a Twilight Princess Game Club episode, I will likely talk about Octopath. By the time the next episode goes up, I believe my review will be up.
Yeah, we're weirdly ahead of schedule. It's honestly kind of nice.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's good, because next week I'll just be playing Octopath Traveler instead of recording a podcast.
Speaking of RPGs, we also saw Sea of Stars again.
August 29th. Demo 5 years to the day after The Messenger came out.
That looks cool.
I'm very excited for Sea of Stars. Apparently the demo that came out is a vertical slice. It's got some guest composer music from Yasunori Mitsuda, and I believe the soundtrack is done by the same person who did the Messenger soundtrack, or at least the soundtrack is primarily done because Mitsuda's doing some music.
That means it's going to be a banger then.
Yeah.
I mean, Mitsuda coming to do some guest pieces, that's how you wind up with Xenoblade music. It's good stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, the bass score of The Messenger was pretty darn good itself.
It was a banger.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to Sea of Stars. And it is kind of funny seeing that and Octopath be right next to each other, because it's like Square Enix trying to go back to what they originally made. And I feel like Sea of Stars, at least from what Sabotage Studio is selling, I think they get it. I think they get why Chrono Trigger is great. I hope it truly comes through in the execution of that game. Because that dude sure shit got what Ninja Gaiden. I mean, that dude, there's more than just one guy who works there. But having
the collective
talked to,
dude.
Yeah. What is it? Thierry, I forget his name, but the most vocal person at Sabotage Studio. Having done some interview stuff with him and talking with him at PAX and stuff, he knows Ninja Gaiden, and I played The Messenger, and it was evident that he knew Ninja Gaiden. So if he takes that kind of work of, how Ninja Gaiden led into The Messenger and then Chrono Trigger leading the Sea of Stars could be one of the best games in recent memory.
And I guess I'll just throw out the names Ghost Trick and Etrian Odyssey and let you guys go for a second here.
I'm ready to cook.
Yeah, that there was one of those I had to direct ping Neil on, because oh my god, this is actually happening. We're getting Etrian on a modern console. That means the series is not dead because the 3DS died.
Yeah. I mean, just the order of those things being revealed. I mean, Katamari and Button Kaitos, we had a decent idea of that. There was a couple hours before the direct, it was art leaked for Button Kaitos 1 and 2. Seemed pretty legitimate. Katamari, I think, was mentioned in a ratings board filing or something. Still, I do love We Heart Katamari adds a part where you play as a younger version of the King of All Cosmos, which, sure, that seems like a funny bit. And yeah, then Ghost Trick, just love to see that game. I think that's one of the, legitimately, Ghost Trick is one of my favorite games of all time. The more people that have access to that game, the better the world is, in my opinion. And apparently, there is a remastered soundtrack that is being added by the
composer of the game.
Which is great. Once again, Ghost Trick is one of the greatest video games I have ever played. But Etrian and Odyssey, baby. Before we talk about the absolute horse shit that is the pricing of these games, they are bringing back Etrian and Odyssey 1, 2, and 3 in an HD form. Touchscreen controls for mapping. It looks like the way they showed it in video and screenshots, that like the left side of the screen will be like, you know, the dungeon, and the right side will be your mapping. Your cartography, as it were. So basically, like, kind of almost a DS game, but like sideways.
Sure.
Like Wii U format.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're going to hold it normally, but it's just like kind of basically the top screen is going to be on the left side of the screen, and the touch screen is going to be on the right side of the screen. And I, you know, will fully be able to say, like, does this work when I play the game? Hopefully I can switch it. I'm a lefty, you sons of bitches. But I, Lord, I hope you can, or else we're going to have some words at Etrian Odyssey.
Just play it upside down. You'll get used to it.
But the fact that that game is coming back, like, those games are incredible. And I can't wait to, I've never played three. It's the one whole, because I never played the series until it hit 3DS, and I played four, and then I played Untold 1 and 2, played 5, played Nexus, and pretty much loved all of them in varying degrees. The one thing to note with these three games, which are all, they were the original DS releases, it looks like none of the Untold content is being carried over. It looks like these are based off the DS games, and at least not the added content that was brought into the 3DS games, which probably not the end of the world. Because the Untold game, like, I love Untold 2. I think Untold 1 adds like this weird crystal shit that I don't really think works all that well.
The Untolds also added a bit of story elements, but I think most people were just there for the misadventures of Fight and Heal.
Yeah. Either way, I'm gonna put a metric fuckload of time into all three of these games. But in a typical Atlas move, these games are $40 each, or $80 in a three-game collection. As of right now, it seems like they are only available digitally.
Okay. I mean, like, 80 for the three is, like, almost okay. It's still a little...
Yeah.
I think 60 for the three would be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, we were just talking about, you know, Nintendo needed to make sure the thing made money. And if this is the way I get new Etrian Odyssey, like, sure. Like, I'm in.
Yeah, it's a great way to also make sure that you never get any more Etrian Odyssey. Like, because this isn't going to sell.
Sega, though, does tend to be pretty aggressive with price drops. So
that's true.
Probably be in Atlas, especially. So you'll probably get, there will be some good deals on this if you're
also
wait a few months.
I do think that Atlas, and I'm not as, like, I haven't kept up with modern Atlas as closely as I, you know, kept up with Atlas like 10, 15 years ago. Atlas historically is usually very good at, like, knowing, being in tune with their audience. Like, I remember, like, how they succeeded in, like, that DS era was, they basically would localize games and know exactly how well they would sell, so that way they wouldn't be saddled with a lot of excess games. Like, they would basically order enough that they needed to survive, which led to shortages of a lot of their games, unfortunately. But it kind of kept Atlas lean, so they wouldn't just die like a lot of companies did, especially, you know, after the financial crisis of 2008 and stuff like that. Like, we were just talking about how one AAA game fuck up could end a company. Atlas seemed relatively smart, especially their USA operation. I don't know how well that's carried over when they've been under Sega's domain, but I feel like Sega and Atlas have a pretty good handle on what their audience is going to spend for. So hopefully Etrian Odyssey stays around.
Like to see some more. Maybe we get those Persona Q games off rescued from the 3DS as well at some point.
I mean, yeah, it, like if this paves the way for getting, you know, 4-5 and Nexus in a collection on Switch or something, and getting Persona Q 1 and 2, or just doing a brand new Etrian Odyssey game, like, yes, I will give you $80 for three games.
We also got We Love Katamari, the sequel to Katamari, which, great. The Katamari game's good. Make them available, yay. I don't know if either of you guys have any strong opinions on Katamari or not.
I love them. Those games are great.
I love We Love Katamari especially, so that was a big one for me, although we'll probably get to the one that put me chair falling over like in the old Vince McMahon meme.
it's coming.
Yep.
Seems like they're going to do all of them, so yeah, it's coming. We also got Baten Kaitos. Is it? It is Baten, right? Not Baten.
Baten, I think.
Baten.
Baten.
Yeah.
So it's Samus, but Baten Kaitos. Got it. Okay.
Right.
I can do this. Famed for being a Monolith Soft game that isn't Xenoblade Chronicles X. it's
famed. Although it does seem like Monolith has nothing to do with this.
No, I mean they made the
they made the game on GameCube, yeah. Both of them.
Right.
I learned today that Baten Kaitos Origins, which was the prequel that came out on GameCube after the first one, is actually Baten Kaitos 2 in Japan, which is very confusing to me because it's a fucking prequel.
This looks like a pretty it's funny comparing this when we also get Metroid. This is a very light touch remaster, texture updates and things like that. But this looks like a GameCube game, and not a particularly pretty one.
This is being done by Bandai Namco. Bit of a weird issue with this, though, is that according to a Q&A on Bandai Namco's website, this is only going to have Japanese voice acting, even for Origins, which had a full localization as an early work of 8.4. So
did they like lose the rights to the localization or what?
In mid-2000s video games from Japan, I would expect anything at this point. It's possible they either lost the rights or they lost the code. One of the two.
Always good to see the game made more accessible, but a bummer that it, because of that, like it's arguably not going to be the definitive release.
But I missed both of these when they came out on the GameCube. I was not as terminally online as I am now, so I didn't even know that these existed until maybe like reading about Origins in one of the last issues of Nintendo Power I ever got.
And finally, Level 5 exists.
The first one, it's like, oh, okay, I guess they got some money out of that free-to-play game in Japan. And then they announce a new Fantasy Life game, and then follow that up with a new late game. It's like, did they get bought by the Saudis or something?
They got embraced.
Where? Because there is no way that the company that was basically on death's door, I think as recently as a year ago, can suddenly have three very interesting looking projects in various states of readiness, two of them ready to come out this year.
Yeah. I don't know what happened. Maybe after Sakamoto got Famicom Detective Club and 2D Metroid made, he passed off whatever blackmail he had and gave it to Level 5.
That would make sense.
Yeah, I do. And I said it earlier in the show, a little bit concerned. Does Level 5 still have it in them? Like, what is it? Layton's Mystery Journey, Lady Layton, wasn't great. And if that's going to be kind of the basis for a new Professor Layton game, maybe I'm trying to measure my expectations. Because
the original puzzle designer of the Layton games passed away middle of last decade. So
yeah, really yeah. And I think that sense. I remember looking into it when Layton's Mystery Journey came out, and I was like, this is mediocre. That could have been part of the reason why. But you know, here's hoping, because the Layton series is really awesome, and it would be cool to see it come back to its, you know, former form. Fantasy Life is another game that, like, I think that 3DS game just kicks ass. you know, hopeful that the new game will be just as good as the original. They did do like a wacko Fantasy Life mobile game that was bad. But hey, you know, here's hoping that they recapture the magic of the original game in Fantasy Life. The girl who steals time.
So that's the end of our list of things. Anything else from this direct? We want to talk a little bit about but sales data that came out. Donald, you wanted to bring that up.
Yeah, because there are a couple of things that stand out for me from this. One, it's amazing that the two biggest sellers of the year thus far for Nintendo combined to sell like 30 million copies, and neither of them really works all that well. Then again, that mainly came up because my roommate caught an 8-minute ban last night for a Splatoon 3 cause communication error, and Pokemon has been well documented. But yeah, Pokemon, fastest selling game in Nintendo history. I really hope they're not taking the wrong lessons from this.
Yeah,
we'll see if Tears of the Kingdom comes out and is horrifically broken.
Well, we'll see. Know. I think it'll be interesting whenever the Pokemon thingamabob is.
27th.
Yeah, because like that, when do we, like, because I could see there being DLC for this game this year. But I feel like the concept of releasing DLC for it while it's in the state it's in is just a horrible thing to do. So we'll see if that happens before it, because there's still not been a major patch for this game.
There's been the one which calmed some of the issues down, but there are still things that are noticeable with Pokemon. I've had no end of issues when I've been trying to do the event raid battles online. Yeah.
Anything, so, if you interact with the internet or even like local connections, anytime that you're not playing 100% single player, the game just loses its mind.
Yeah, and the other thing that stands out is that I know that like 2021 Q3 or Nintendo's Q3 holiday quarter was like tail end of the everybody staying inside era, but just seeing everything be down, and in the case of hardware being down dramatically year over year, I'm not surprised that the price is falling, like the stock price is falling as much as it is, and that they're getting questions about, okay, what are you going to do now? Because their Switch shipments for the fourth quarter, or for the calendar quarter, I'm talking there. That's the lowest they've been. Like the last time they were ever that low was the first year of the system, and they were still really selling the 3DS as well because they had a Pokemon game on the 3DS that year.
Yeah.
I mean, like we are in the. I mean, it's the decline. And some of it was. I mean, they definitely it got elongated because of the pandemic. Like this is. It will not be a surprise when Nintendo starts talking about a new console in like a year or so.
Yeah, see, it's a gentle decline. It's not like we're not falling off a cliff.
Nope. But it's not Wii in 2012 bad.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Or you know, Wii U in the early half of 2013. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know, if they keep selling Pokemon like that, maybe they can just keep. If you don't need to make your games look or play better, then I don't know why you ever need to make a new system.
Yeah, but I mean, they are losing serious, like they lose serious face when they have to come out and make public apologies for the quality of the game.
Yeah.
And they have said that like there is a major patch that is supposed to come out this month. I'm assuming
for Pokemon.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm assuming this is the one that it's probably going to lay the foundation for the DLC. There was a similar kind of patch, except not as dramatic, for Sword and Shield when the expansion pass for that got announced in 2020.
Yeah.
So hopefully that patch, which will probably come out on the 27th, will be something that can fix the game up and make it presentable. I mean, I'm not expecting it to run like Metroid Prime Remastered, but at least get it to the level of a Legends Arceus or something.
My bar is that I want to be able to play online for longer than 2 hours without my system hardlocking. That's the bar that I need to get over.
I just really hope they fix the game enough that you could just be like, well, it was dog shit at launch, but it got better. So that way I don't sit here, feel like a weirdo being like, I really like the game.
I really like the game too.
Right. I like the game, just not playing it, if that makes sense. Like, everything it's doing from a game design standpoint, I think, is incredible. It just doesn't run.
There's things I want to do with this game that I never thought I would ever do again. Like, I think you can actually build a competitive ready Pokemon in under an hour in this game. I want to try that. Actually go online and play competitive Pokemon for the first time, I think, since I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Back when we had to do it through IRC bots or a website that referred to confusion hitting as kicking yourself in the crotch, because this was the early 2000s.
Yeah. Hopefully that'll happen and that'll get better.
I'm looking forward to hearing news on Pokemon, because I hope they give some updates and make that game run and look better. And also tell us about what expansion pass is inevitably going to come out this year, because I will play the shit out of that after I play the shit out of that game.
I wonder if they're going to be bringing in a lot of new Pokemon, or if we're just going to end up going to the country next door. Which apparently
they're going to take Pokemon out, actually. There's too many.
This is the way we made it better.
Finally, we're getting rid of Gengar.
Yeah, we found out that all the performance issues are caused by having too many of the Pokemon in the game.
Let's go back to Gengar. Remember when, like, Ghastly Haunter and Gengar used to be cool Pokemon? Homeboys are in every fucking Pokemon game now, and having to do Haunter, unless it's an Arceus, which is the best one. Like, you have to trade it, and as someone who's a solitary Pokemon player, I'm just like, oh cool, a Ghastly, I'm never doing anything with this Pokemon.
You can actually do an in-game trade for a Haunter that evolves this time in Scarlet and Violet.
Oh really? I should look that up.
Well, I think that might be an episode, so thank you guys very much for joining, and thank you for listening. If you're listening to this somewhere where you can leave a review, you could do that, and we'd appreciate that very much. If you want to write in to the podcast, you can contact us at connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com, or hit us up on Twitter at connectivitynwr. What were you about to say, Donald?
Can I sneak in a plug in here?
Yeah, do it.
Okay, it's actually for the Patreon, patreon.com/nwr. For the last 2 years, I've been doing the NW Rewind, look back at a previous news story. This coming Monday, episode 100.
Wow.
So there is 100 of those little video essays.
They're really good.
I flagrantly ripped off the format from Retronauts, but I have no qualms about.
Well, unless they support us on Patreon, they'll never know.
Yeah.
So we're safe. Or if they listen to this podcast.
So looking forward to that on Monday. The topic I picked out was the Breath of the Wild expansion pass getting announced. So that's going to be a very interesting discussion in the context of, oh, now we're paying $10 more for the game, the sequel anyway.
Yeah, those are great. And yeah, supporting us on Patreon is always a cool thing to do, because you get exclusive stuff like that. Yeah. Anyway, thanks both of you for joining me tonight. And we will see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.